It's time for another episode of Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, the show that gets you behind the scenes of the LA Galaxy and into the minds of soccer reporters and MLS experts. Your hosts for the day are Corner of the Galaxy's Josh Gessman and LA Times soccer reporter Kevin Baxter. Let's start the show.
Hello, everybody in LA Galaxy land. Josh Gessman, Mr. Kevin Baxter with you once again. Glad to be joining you on a Monday night after the LA Galaxy play on Saturday. Lose to the Vancouver Whitecaps 4-2 in a game they were winning 2-1 at one point. So I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about. Kevin was actually up in Vancouver for the game, so we'll get to talk to him about that as well. Kevin, how was your trip up and back? You in a good spot now?
Yeah, I guess Vancouver is a beautiful city to go to, but it was a long trip. 2 weeks. Remember, I started in San Jose with the national team, went to Panama, was actually the only person that I know of that made the trip from Panama City to Vancouver. It flew right across the United States had 4 beautiful days in Vancouver. It didn't end well for the Galaxy, however.
Yeah, no, it didn't. And again, a 4-2 loss after being up 2-1. This was after the LA Galaxy gave up, and I should say LA Galaxy. I should point to Clément Diop as giving up the first goal of that game where the Galaxy were actually down 1-0. So a comeback and then a fall short, if you want to look at it that way. And on this game, on this particular show, we try not to completely recap this game, but I'm going to tell you right now that most of the topics we have in here were brought up directly from this game. So it wouldn't surprise me, Kevin, if we go over a lot of what this game had to offer and sort of how it fell apart for the LA Galaxy. So I'll open the floor to you. Quick thoughts on this this loss for the Galaxy.
Well, what surprised me is how, I guess, honest the people were afterwards. Kurt Anofo, who's been very close to the vest, was, you could tell he was really upset. He repeated several times that they gave the game away. Kurt felt that the Galaxy won the first half. They were leading 2-1. He thought they played really well first 20 minutes of the second half, and then he said they had a couple of chances they didn't convert. He said it should have been 3-1, that the game should have been over by then. But his thing was the Galaxy gave the game away. He said we're up 2-1, and from the 46th to the 65th minute we were really good. We were controlling the game. We should have put it away. We gifted the second goal, Anofo said, and then we just gave them the third. Literally passed the ball to their player. That was talking about the João Pedro pass.
Yes.
He said, if we sensed that the game was there for the taking, we should have just gone and taken it, and we did not. And, you know, it's important to say afterwards that the Galaxy, they did look really good up to the 64th minute. Kurt's really good, really correct on that, and they should have won the game, but they didn't win the game. The Whitecaps won for the first time this season, and the Galaxy now in 10th place in the 11-team Western Conference. They have just 3 points. They're behind even Minnesota United, an expansion team that's allowed 20 goals already this season.
Yes.
Galaxy are behind them in the standings.
Oh, MLS, how fun you are. It's an interesting sort of thing. You look at that, and obviously, I want to caution people. I wouldn't expect that, you know, if you look at the goal differential there and how that stands, I think the Galaxy are going to be better than Minnesota United. How much better, Kevin, is a really good question, because I don't think anybody really understands that right now. But I will absolutely agree with Kurt Anofo. I'll agree with you as well. The LA Galaxy at points in this game play better than I have seen them play at any point during their first 4 games. So they played tremendous soccer for a long while. Throw out the first Diop goal. If you throw that out, the LA Galaxy are leading 2-0 in the 60th minute and really dominating the possession, dominating the ball, dominating everything about Vancouver. And for me, I was excited to see this team play up to a certain level. You had Alessandrini, who clearly broke out in this game. This is a guy who I think has received criticism starting throughout the first games, Kevin, of not really being a designated player who's worthy of it, and he gets 2 goals in this game. So you're excited to see that. You see all that. And then, 2-1, 60th minute, 65th minute, you sort of get in there. I mean, the Galaxy had a chance with Jermaine Jones in the 55th minute. I think there was another chance maybe in the 57th minute to again go up 3-1. Galaxy had everything going for them. Some poor goalkeeping, absolutely, from Diop. Some poor defense. I think all the way down the middle of the field for me, this LA Galaxy team was poor. And so, we sort of start to take a broad view, Kevin, still early in the season. What do you view as the problem with the LA Galaxy? Are they too young? Did the players they bring in, are they not effective? Is it all too soon to make any sort of generalization about this team?
I think it's too soon to make a generalization, but it's not too soon to point out that there are some trends developing that are not good. There are some good trends. One of them, you mentioned Alessandrini. You know, he has 2 goals and 2 assists, and the Galaxy only have 5 goals this season. Or, well, not a, yeah, I guess both were assists. He's set up both goals in Kansas in Real Salt Lake.
Yep.
And he and Emma Boateng seem to have really good chemistry. Now, Alessandrini is going to have that chemistry with Jesse's artist now that he's back. Alessandrini doesn't seem to mix well with the forwards for whatever reason. He's had some good chemistry with the other midfielders. He hasn't mixed so well with the forwards. And with Jossi back and being such a big part of the offense, I think they're going to have to work something out. But certainly he and Boateng are on the same page. And he looked really good. Alessandrini, he looked really good, not just the 2 goals, but just about everything else he did. A lot of other players, not so much. You mentioned Diop, and I need to correct perhaps a misconception there. I think some people saw some of the tweets that I had after the game. And yes, he did make the comment about the artificial turf and the one bounce that led to a goal. But I don't want anyone to get the impression that he was not stand-up, because he absolutely was. In addition to the comment he made about the goal, he also said, talking about the first goal when he came way out of the box and lost control of the ball, he said, "It's on me. I take the blame on the first goal." And then of the game in general, he went on to say Saturday night, this one is on me and no one else. The guy scored 2 goals. I should have done a better job tonight. There is no one else, no coaches, no one. This is all on me. I can't concede 4 goals. This is not about the communication. It's on me. I should have had a better read on the game on this one." And then he talked about, you know, going on to learn from this. That was pretty stand up for him to say that, and for him to take the responsibility, because, you know, the defense played poorly. I don't know that they seem to be playing a very high line, and teams get behind them. Remember Portland's counterattack goal? Teams get behind them all the time. They did 2 times on this one, and clearly Vancouver knew that Diop was an aggressive goalkeeper that would come off the line, and they tried to bait him into doing that, which he did twice. But you look at the goal that was set up by the João Pedro bad pass. Another goal came off a rebound that a defender didn't clear. So, Diop was stand up. He did make a lot of mistakes, but he didn't get a lot of help either.
Can I go counter? I'm going to go counter on this particular thing. I've talked to Diop, obviously, after LA Galaxy 2 games, talked to him now after his senior team games as well. And when he loses, and whether or not he's at fault or not, he's the guy who always takes blame. He's the guy who always steps up. And so, yes, I want to give him credit for that, Kevin. I also want to say that I feel like this is his thing to say whenever the Galaxy lose a game, is that he says, you know, this is my fault and I need to get better and I need to learn from it. You know, I liked his quotes. I always like his quotes. That's the thing. But it kind of comes down to, you know, am I hearing the same thing every single time whenever you talk to a player? And you and I have covered this team for long enough. We know some answers we're going to get out of certain players. And for me, the answer Diop gives, which he's right, I think he shoulders a huge part of the blame. And so I'm not going to say he's disingenuous about it, but that's his go-to answer, is that, you know, I take the blame. The guy scored 2 goals for me. I can't let in 4 goals. He's right on all that stuff. It's just, he seems like that guy to me, that he's always going to be, hey, you know, it's not good enough. And to me, that takes some of it away from it, is that, well, are you learning? Is it really understanding? Or is your blanket statement just to sort of understand and say, yes, these were my faults, these were my problems, I need to get better, which are all true. But if you say them over and over again, they lose some effect. Am I out of bounds with that?
No, that's accurate. And he does talk about learning from it, and then he doesn't appear to learn from it. But I guess... And in that game, he talked about giving up 4 goals. There were some defensive errors that led to some mistakes.
Oh, but, yes.
You know, he could have given up 6 goals fairly easily. I should say the Galaxy could have given up 6 goals, I think, on that game fairly easily. There were some goals that obviously that clearly that he should have stopped and didn't, and the rebounds he gave up. So, yeah, there's a lot of fault on Diop, but I think, too, there's a lot of fault on the defense. And he could have said, hey, yeah, I gave up that goal and that breakaway. I was alone. There was no defenders back there. And
yes.
Then they did that again.
Yes.
My defenders didn't learn from that. And what happened with Ashley Cole on that one play deep in the game in about the 75th minute when Ashley Cole had to make the sliding clearance? That was a sure goal because of an Ashley Cole mistake. Diop could have said all that, too, and it would have been accurate. It wouldn't have been popular with his teammates, but
right.
It would have been accurate.
Right.
And he didn't. So I don't know. I guess I give him a C+ on this. He did make a lot of mistakes, but he did own up to them. Next week Brian Rowe will be in goal, so we won't really find out whether he's learned anything from it. But he could have gone another way with it, and I just wanted to, you know, my tweet mistakenly, I think, gave some fans the impression that he did go that way. He didn't. He was stand up about it, and you're right. This is kind of his pat answer. He needs to do the follow through part, which is the part where he talks about learning from it. He needs to nail that part of the explanation as well.
Well, it's literally and almost my credo about, you know, Clément Diop is that this is the guy. He's more athletic than Rowe. Absolutely. He makes more spectacular saves than Rowe. Absolutely. He is that guy. He makes huge, ridiculous, unbelievable saves, and he does it with, you know, some pure athleticism that Brian Rowe doesn't have. I mean, Brian Rowe, I think, would tell you that he doesn't have the same athleticism as Clément Diop. The problem is, the two biggest problems, and it showed at LA Galaxy 2, and if anybody's never been to any of those games, well, now you know exactly what we saw whenever you go to these games with Diop, is that he gives up big rebounds, which sometimes means he makes spectacular saves on the second one as well. So he gets a lot of credit for making really good saves off of rebounds that he creates or he allows to happen. He gives up huge rebounds, and he comes off his line way too much. And like I said, he would get there 90% of the time. But Kevin, we saw one of the 10 times out of 100 that he didn't get to the ball in the right spot. And, you know, some people are saying, hey, you know, the ball checked up on the turf, and it absolutely did on the goal in the 19th minute. It absolutely checked up. I've watched that a couple times now. He's late to that ball, regardless of that ball checking up on the turf. He was never going to get there. And not only that, he had guys coming back that were helping out. I think I even wrote it down somewhere because I was trying to say who was actually back for this. Pedro is running back. He almost gets a block on the ball. Smith is running back. Nathan Smith is covering as well. And Ashley Cole are all running back. You have three guys who are actually pretty close to that. If he can come off his line a little bit and cut down the angle, there might be a chance for him to save that, because the ball was even moving away from the goal for me, Kevin. It's not even a super dangerous ball, as in it was going to have to take a perfect touch in order for that ball to be brought down and be put in a playing position. And Diop, basically by coming out, allowed that touch to be sloppy, and then the finish. So, you know, it's just, if you like Diop, I understand why you do. He's big and flashy and he's showy, Kevin. But for me, that's exactly this game against Vancouver. His big rebounds that he allowed and coming off the line. Remember, he did it twice and didn't get punished one of them. The guy was also offside, by the way, that didn't get called. But he did it twice. He had a lot of rebounds. That is what Clément Diop does, and he needs to get better. If he can limit that, he's the better goalkeeper than Brian Rowe. But right now, on Friday, Brian Rowe's coming back. I mean, people are asking that. We got LA Galaxy Outsider, your favorite person there, Kevin. LA Galaxy Outsider says that, asking about if Diop is coming or Rowe is coming, and a bunch of people ask that question as well, and it's Brian Rowe on Friday. The only reason he didn't start this game, in my opinion, is because he was just back to training that week, and so realistically, he got a full week, and maybe that's not enough time. And Diop was in a fairly good form, so that's what I see happening.
Well, Diop also, remember, was put in there by Curt Anofo, who said he wanted to engender some competition between his goalkeepers. Well, it's not much of a competition if the other guy doesn't get a chance. And if Brian Rowe didn't earn a chance based on Diop's performance in Vancouver, then again, there isn't much of a competition. I totally expect to see Brian Rowe back. A couple of things about what you said. Yes, Diop is incredibly athletic, gifted, fast. He's the second fastest player on the team. I don't know whether you knew that, but I was at training one time last year and they had a race between a number of fast players, and Boateng won, but Diop was a step behind him. So the second fastest player on the Galaxy is the goalkeeper, which is a little strange. But thing that I would say is...
You getting magic phone calls again, Kevin? Is this breaking news at the news desk? Sources calling you. Yes, go ahead.
But one of the things, I think with a goalkeeper, you want your goalkeeper to be a little bit conservative. You don't want him necessarily charging off the line and doing some of the things that Clément Diop does, in my mind. You'd like him to be a little bit conservative. He is the last line of defense. I think he has to be a little more sure than some other players. It's like you look at the NFL. Yeah, linebackers are they can blitz, they can do all kinds of things, but the free safety's got to stay back and make sure no one gets behind him. So I think the goalkeeper has to be a little bit more conservative. Somebody told me a couple of years ago, and I thought it was words of wisdom, that every goalkeeper will stop the safe shots, but you win a game by the one or two difficult shots that a goalkeeper stops or doesn't stop. If he stops them, you win the game. If he doesn't, you lose the game. And I'm not sure that Diop is necessarily proven up to that yet. I mean, again, taking some of these chances, I think he gives up more opportunities than he saves at this point. But he'll learn. He does have the athletic gifts. He needs to just, I think, get the experience in there. And you talked to last point, you talked about giving up the rebounds. This is kind of an interesting conversation I had with Matt Reese, mm-hmm. who is now the goalkeeper coach for the national team, was with the Galaxy last year. He told me one of the things about American keepers is because Americans grow up playing ball sports where they can use their hands, basketball, football, baseball, when a ball comes in, an American goalkeeper is more likely to grab the ball with his hands, catch the ball, and actually control it with his hands, where the European goalkeepers are more apt to punch the ball away.
Right.
And we saw that with Diop, who's French, punching the ball away rather than accepting it. That gives up a lot of rebounds, and at least a couple of the goals on in Vancouver were off rebounds. So does Rowe catch those? I don't know. I'm not making just I'm making a general sweeping statement, not necessarily comparing Rowe to Diop, but the idea of the rebound, giving up the rebound and not actually grabbing the ball and setting up a goal kick is kind of interesting, and one that I've been watching ever since then. And Matt's right. American goalkeepers do tend to control the rebound, and they don't give up a whole lot of second-chance goals because of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other part of the goalkeeping and rebounds is that you try, and, you know, this is something that is practice. I guarantee that the LA Galaxy practices this, that on rebounds, you try to push them wide. You try to push them out of the way. And with Diop, he has a tendency to push them back into the center, or push them back into people who are coming instead of out of bounds or around the posts or those type of things. So, I mean, again, it's a learning curve for him. He's young. I get it. You're not, again, I don't think you start Brian Rowe in this game regardless, because there are certainly people who are criticizing Curt Anolfo for not starting Brian Rowe. Most of those people are completely unaware that Brian Rowe was injured the week, you know, basically the weeks before this, and just came back to training before this game, realistically only had, you know, 5 days of training. So you're not going to put in that guy, and especially with Diop playing the previous games. That just makes sense. That shouldn't be a criticism of Curt Anolfo in my mind. Some of the other things that happened in this game, though, Kevin, I mean, we have to talk about, and I'm going to talk about the spine, all right? And let's go down and talk about these different guys, because for me, I want to talk about Yella Van Dom, who's playing at center back. I want to talk about Joao Pedro, who's playing in the middle. I want to talk about Jermaine Jones playing in the central midfield. And I want to talk about Giovanni Dos Santos, because in my mind, you look at this Vancouver game and where the collapse realistically hit was from all of these players not doing their job, and that includes Yella Van Dom. I know everybody likes to put him on a pedestal a lot of times, but in my mind, what I'm seeing so far from Yella Van Dom is that he is trying to do too much. And Kevin, maybe this is a reaction to, you know, hey, Yella, you had such a great year last year. We need you to do just as much as you did last year, even more. So maybe in his mind, doing more is trying to play everybody's position, because he's the best defender in the center for the LA Galaxy. And if you continue to leave Daniel Starris back there, if you continue to leave like guys like Nathan Smith back there, and even Ashley Cole, who's not quick, but God, he takes great angles and he does some great things. Yella Van Dom, without it and not as part of that back line of the defense, especially on counters, whenever they're being, it is a mistake. He needs to be back there. And if that means that you have to pull him back, in my opinion, from being that guy who loves to stay forward on set pieces, and he's a big target, I know why you'd want to, Kevin. That needs to happen for me, because the Galaxy defense is suffering too much when he's out of position.
Are you saying the Galaxy is spineless? You said you wanted to address the
yes.
spine, and then
you know what? Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that they're spineless right now, and that's one of the major problems. Because you talked about the defense, and definitely there were some defensive miscues. And if I go back and look at defensive miscues, it takes this cascading effect. It goes to Joao Pedro, it goes to Jermaine Jones, and it goes to Giovanni Dos Santos, and it goes to Yella Van Dom. That is what the Galaxy were supposed to be built around, Kevin, is having this strong, sturdy spine. And in these first games, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, you're right. The spine was supposed to be the key to the team. And you looked at, they had some youth out on the wings, both on the back line and now in the midfield. But again, you know, I'm going to come back to the sort of the same thing I was talking about the goalkeepers. How do you play? Do you play conservative because you know that there are some, you have some weaknesses, you know, you have some young defenders back there. You know, you have Nathan Smith, Dave Romney, Robbie Rogers is not back yet. Ashley Cole just came back. So until then, you had Rafa Garcia on one of the wings. So if you're Yella Van Dom, do you say, hey, there's a lot of young guys back here. I'm probably going to have to cover for these guys at some point. I better stay back and hold my position. Or do you do what he did last year, which has become essentially an extra midfielder, which he loves to do, and push up and become part of the offense? And I think that's the dilemma that Van Dom is trying to answer. Which thing does he do? I think the Galaxy as a team the defensive back line is just way too high. And you know, as I mentioned earlier, I see them getting beat on counterattacks all the time. You know, I would say half the game you're watching the Galaxy defenders run after somebody. They're running forward. They're not backpedaling, which is what you like to see your back line doing. And I think that's become a problem in the dressing room. I suspect there's a little bit of a rift in the dressing room right now. One of the great untold stories of last season, by the way, was the rift that grew in the dressing room. Right. And it was very apparent at the end of the season. Depending on who you talk to, the rift went several different ways, but appeared to be a three-way break. And it broke down with the older European players, Steven Gerrard, Robbie Keane. They formed one clique. Then there were the older MLS players like Mike McGee and Alan Gordon. They formed another clique. And then there was the younger MLS players like, say, Brian Rowe and Dave Romney and Daniel Sturridge. They were the third clique. But these people did not seem to talk to each other a whole lot. In fact, they pointed fingers across the chasm that was growing. It's already started this year. When you listen to some of the things that were said after the game, it seemed, I know that it's been a problem in the past where Jermaine Jones has talked about Yella Von Dam and some of the things about not wanting to stay back and play defense and not to trust his teammates. That was one of the things Jermaine said after one of the first two home games. He said that he had talked to Jermaine Jones and told him to lay back, not to push forward, to trust the offensive players to do what they do best and let those guys handle that. And it seemed to be coming up again in this one because, again, Yella Von Dam pushing forward. Right. And after the game, I'm looking for the quote here. After the game, Jermaine Jones said, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit because his English sometimes is a little stilted, but it's way better than my German. So I'm going to try to clean it up a little bit and paraphrase him. But he said, when we get back to L.A., we need to discuss it and we need to step it up. He said, I'm not going to name any names, but I think inside the dressing room, we have to talk. We have to clear the air. We have to make this better. And then he said, you have to bring to the team your part. In other words, you have to do what you're supposed to be doing in the field, what your assignment is, and not try to do more. If you try to do more, you're going to make mistakes and we're going to lose games. So right there, it seemed as if Jermaine Jones was saying, look, some people are trying to do a little bit too much and not paying attention to what they should be doing. They're trying to do other people's jobs and not their own.
Right.
Yella, I think, was guilty of the same thing that Jermaine had openly criticized him about before. But in all fairness, Jermaine could have been talking about a lot of players on Saturday because it didn't seem like Gio Dos Santos was doing his job. João Pedro clearly was not doing what he was supposed to be doing. So there was a lot of people that Jermaine could have been talking about. And maybe that's the point. Maybe there are a lot of people he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly lean towards the Giovanni Dos Santos group whenever we're talking there, and I think you and I discussed that already, that, you know, for me, Giovanni Dos Santos has been MIA, you know, since the first whistle of the season. Granted, supposedly he was injured, you know, the first game and a half there, and then he didn't play in the third game. So, you know, he comes back, he's available. Maybe he's not 100%, and I can give him a little bit of a pass, except for the fact, Kevin, is that this seems to be a growing trend that we have seen with Giovanni Dos Santos. It's the trend that realistically saw him have maybe not the best relationship with Robbie Keane on the field, off the field. This is a problem for the LA Galaxy. Giovanni Dos Santos is supposed to have this team built around him. And I think they've done an okay job getting players who could complement him, except that I'm not sure there is a complement to Giovanni Dos Santos right now in the position he's at. It cascades for me, and it's a problem. Giovanni Dos Santos doesn't press forward, you know, on the press. He doesn't connect with Jack McBean. He doesn't link himself with the guys up front in the attacking zone. You're expecting Giovanni Dos Santos, especially with Sebastian Legette being out, you're expecting Gio to be the creative player. And when he's not the creative player, which I don't think he was at all in this Vancouver game, when he's not that creative guy, there's a gap there. And who tries to fill that gap is Jermaine Jones. So Jermaine Jones plays up higher than maybe realistically I'd want him to be, but he's going to be a little bit of a creative guy. He's going to be that attacking central midfielder, all right? He's going to be that guy, but you don't need him up as far as you can. If Giovanni Dos Santos is realistically creating the bridge between that midfield and Jack McBean and providing, you know, outlets for both of those guys. So when that doesn't happen, then Jermaine Jones steps up. Then Joel Pedro steps up because Jermaine Jones has to roam further up. Whenever Joel Pedro steps up, Kevin, he's not fast enough to recover on a lot of these things. And we've seen it time and time again. Joel Pedro getting beat on counterattacks, coming back, having to protect. And then where is Joel Pedro trying to take up that space? Where Yella Von Dam has gotten forward. So that is the cascade that I'm talking about. And you can see that if one guy doesn't do their job, somebody is integral to the LA Galaxy is Giovanni Dos Santos, then you see this absolute cascade, this failure points again and again and again, and the Galaxy are susceptible on counterattacks. We know that, the Galaxy know that, all the Galaxy's opponents know that, and the main reason they are is Giovanni Dos Santos isn't doing his job right now, and that is a huge issue for the LA Galaxy. He's a designated player, he needs to be the creative force, Kevin, and he's not been that. Realistically, even last year, what did he have, 15 goals, 11 assists or something like that? Even last year, he was not that creative force for me as much as the numbers would tell you he is.
Well, a couple of things about that. I'll have to actually confess that there were a couple of moments in the game in Vancouver. I typed Gio's name in the lineup, so I knew he was in the game. But there were a couple of times when I actually stopped and looked on the field and searched for him because he just wasn't doing anything. I wanted to make sure he was still there. Did I miss a substitution? Did I incorrectly read the lineup? Is Gio still hurt? He was totally invisible, absolutely invisible in this game. And this is troubling, I think, for Galaxy fans for a couple of reasons. First of all, Giovanni Dos Santos has a world of talent. He is a very athletic, very talented player. That's why he went to the Barcelona B team and studied at La Masia, in the academy there at a very young age. But he brings that talent into people and he wows them and he sort of hypnotizes them with that great talent. But he's been at 8 teams in the last 10 years. Maybe this is part of the reason why. Maybe he comes in and wows everybody with the talent and then just for whatever reason disappears or doesn't apply himself. And to me, that's what it seems to be. The talent seems to still be there. I think he's healthy. It's just like, I don't know whether he doesn't care, he doesn't apply himself, or takes large portions of the game off, but he's certainly hurting the team. And in the back of my mind, I wonder if we talked to him after the Jonathan Dos Santos thing, or during the time it was blowing up and it didn't happen. And I wonder how serious that was. And if it was serious and it was close, I wonder if Gio is a little bit upset and perturbed that the Galaxy didn't close the deal to bring his brother here. And I wonder if this is part of that. I mean, that's a long series of things that you have to string together to make that true. But the way he ended last year and the way he started this year, and again, you mentioned it, this was his team. Keane is gone. Gerard is gone. Donovan is gone. There's some of the veterans that were fan favorites, AJ, Mike McGee, Alan Gordon, those guys all gone. This is Giovanni Dos Santos' team. He's the big name DP. He's the big price DP. As Dan Beckerman and Chris Klein said before the season, your DPs have to be difference makers. This was all set up. This was Giovanni Dos Santos' coming out party. And four games into the season now, Giovanni Dos Santos didn't want to come to his own party, apparently.
Yeah, it's if you're talking about one of the biggest issues that's facing the LA Galaxy right now, this is it for me, Kevin, is that Giovanni Dos Santos is not, through the first four games, has not shown up once to one single game yet. He scores goals in groups. He gets interested in groups. If you start getting him moving, I think Wilmer Cabrera said something about Kubo Torres at the beginning of the year before the season started. He said, all I need in the first couple of games is just a ball to bounce off his foot and go in the goal, and we're going to be set. And you look at what Kubo Torres has been able to have. I mean, he's had that and a lot more. I think he even leads the league in goals right now. I think he has 6 goals in 4 games or something like that. So he's been outstanding, but you need something to motivate Giovanni Dos Santos. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's getting him on the score sheet, getting him to score some goals and getting him to feel that rhythm. He is sort of a striker in a way. I mean, he's a striker. He's a midfielder. He's a creative. He's your number 10. He has to be the guy who's doing this stuff, whether it's assists or goals. He's got to start to be doing something. But, for my mind, Roman Alessandrini has been so much better than Giovanni Dos Santos so far. And Roman Alessandrini, I think, is making much less money. So, what is the motivation for Giovanni Dos Santos? Did Bruce Arena understand what Gio's motivation is? Has anybody been able to figure it out? And will Kurt Arnolfo be able to figure it out before this team has some serious questions to do? I mean, there's even... we got a question from @RogueLeaderLA, and he says, Gio isn't going anywhere, so what type of player or system is needed to make him succeed? Does bringing in Zlatan make him succeed? So you can see, I get the question. I don't know that anybody has the answer because I've seen him play out wide, Kevin. That didn't seem to be the answer. You see him playing sort of in this underneath striker role, the number 10, a creative underneath Jack McBean, and it'll be underneath Giassi Zardes next week. So, I mean, you're going to get a little change. Maybe he works better with Zardes because whenever Zardes came in, I did see a little bit more energized Giovanni Dos Santos, however that ends up happening. But there's questions here that there's no easy answer for right now. I don't know how you get Gio motivated, Kevin, but you need to get something from him very soon or this LA Galaxy team. The slow start under Bruce Arena usually meant, you know, draws, Kevin, and a couple losses and, you know, no big deal. It wasn't that big of a deal, but you're still getting points. You're still moving. Cardinolfo's losing right now because realistically, Giovanni Dos Santos hasn't shown up yet.
Well, and you made some good points. When Gio doesn't press forward offensively or isn't effective, then other players have to, whether it's Jermaine. In this game, I think Jermaine was fairly active on the offensive end. So when Gio doesn't press forward, those guys have to. So if Jermaine is pressing forward, Yao Pedro has to come up behind him. And already I think the defensive line is too high. But the more people that fill in the gap that Gio is leaving, leaves the Galaxy much more susceptible at the other end. So it is a big problem. I don't think you bring in anybody to sort of spark Gio. Maybe Jonathan would do it. But my point there is that you're going to be your answer to every time he goes into a funk to go out and get somebody else. At some point, this guy is a veteran player, veteran of two World Cups. He needs to step up and do his job. He needs to do what he's being paid to do, and he's not doing it. I'm looking at his stats. You know, the very first game, he had two shots on goal, and he did have that penalty kick goal in the first game. He hasn't had a shot on goal since that first game.
Right.
So this is the guy who was your leading scorer last year, your leading assist guy. The offense is supposed to be built around him, and he hasn't had a shot on goal in three games.
Yeah, and quite honestly, you know, there's tons of blowback because I tend to be a fan of Jack McBean and I watched him play USL and I have certain opinions on his play. I get criticized for blaming other people all the time instead of just Jack McBean. But you saw on the goals that were scored, especially on that second goal that was scored for Alessandrini, the ball goes from Jones to McBean to Boateng, you know, back to Alessandrini. Where's Giovanni Dos Santos in any of this? And when you look at the buildups that realistically were played, and there were some unbelievable buildups in this game, Kevin. The one where Jermaine Jones misses in the 55th minute was like 15 or 20 passes. The Galaxy just running circles around Vancouver. Vancouver had no answer for the movement. You had Jack McBean making a great pass to Ashley Cole on an overlap. You're getting all of these things. And listen, Ashley Cole coming back into this team is huge because now you have a left back who's one, good defensively, and two, pushes forward because that's what the LA Galaxy do. They have their outside backs push forward and get into the offense, and that's where they create the overloads. You get Nathan Smith. The reason Nathan Smith is starting over Rafa Garcia is because Nathan Smith is, I think, as good or better defensively than Rafa Garcia, and he gives you a lot more going forward in my particular case. And right now, Kevin, if I'm you or me and we're looking at players who maybe get, you know, benched and guys who maybe come in, a Joao Pedro maybe needs to take a rest on the bench and understand that, you know, this is going to be difficult coming to Major League Soccer. And maybe Rafa Garcia comes in and plays defensive midfield where he belongs and plays that position. Because, again, you look at all these players and the cascade, you need somebody to step up. The Galaxy are playing with 10 players right now, Kevin. Either Joao Pedro's not showing up, either... Or Giovanni Dos Santos isn't showing up. You're getting one of those guys not showing up every single game. And, you know, realistically, 10 players, 9 players, the LA Galaxy playing with actually 11 players on the field, but you're not getting production out of a couple of those guys. And Pedro needs to be smarter. He's not fast, Kevin. He needs to take better angles. He needs to learn. He's 23. He's played in Portugal. I think he has the soccer IQ to understand this. I don't know if he's homesick, if he's just not used to Major League Soccer yet, which, again, it is certainly an adjustment. And you can see the physicality of Major League Soccer is not sitting well with him. But one of the guys who it wasn't sitting well with was Roman Alessandrini. And Alessandrini went into this game, and I think he started to understand Major League Soccer just a little bit more. I'm looking forward to seeing what Roman can do. I need to see more from Joao Pedro. I need to see Giovanni Dos Santos step up. And for this Friday game, those guys have to be here, or the LA Galaxy will give a team, I believe, who hasn't won a game in the Montreal Impact a chance to beat them at home at StubHub Center against the LA Galaxy, who are quite honestly reeling. Their confidence has to be just absolutely in the gutters right now.
And that's why I think this is a big game for, more than anyone else, a big game for Curt Onoffel. You're right. Montreal has not won a game yet. Vancouver had not won a game until the Galaxy lost to them, gave Vancouver their first win. So, you know, obviously there's precedent that could happen with Montreal too. But the reason I think this is a big game for Kurt Anofo is he's talked about engendering competition. He's talked about giving guys opportunities with some of these injuries. You know, we haven't talked about Sebastian Legette, who's out now for 4 to 6 months. He's talked about using these games to give players opportunities to prove themselves. But so does he go into this and say, hey, Clement Diop had a bad game. You know, I'm counting on him to bounce back. This is a learning experience. Send him back out there. Or does he do what I think would be the wiser thing, is to take Diop and João Pedro, as you mentioned, and say, look, guys, didn't work out. You got to be punished for your performance. João Pedro, that pass that set up the go-ahead goal was, you know, indefensible. We need to take you out. You need to sit on the bench and watch the game a little bit and sort of get a viewpoint from there. You need to be punished for your performance, I guess. There has to be
some accountability. Yeah. So
yeah, consequences. There has to be consequences for that. I was actually thinking not so much Rafa Garcia. I was thinking he might use Bajo Husidic.
Absolutely.
Who hasn't played much.
Yeah, he has an option.
Yeah, I do think that he needs to sit. And you're right about João Pedro. You know, he comes from Portugal, you know, played a lot of youth soccer over there. And I think people look at it and say, wow, he's European. He must be really good. You know, take a look at his first team statistics. He does not have a lot of first team experience in Portugal. So yes, he's from Portugal. He's played in the academy there on the B teams and stuff. Doesn't have a lot of first team experience. I think the game right now is too fast for him. And I do think that the physical nature of MLS soccer has surprised him. So he needs to regroup. He needs to catch his breath. And I think the best way to do that is to have him sit out and just, you know, Kurt needs to have a talk with these guys and say, look, catch your breath, you know, regroup, think about it a little bit. I'm going to give you a week off, watch the game from the bench and see if you can pick some things up there rather than put them back in there. Because another mistake like that by either one, Pedro or Diop, it's probably just going to crush them. So it might be better for them to step back, watch a game, and then regroup and try to get back in there.
Yeah.
This is a very – I mean, you said the Galaxy are reeling right now. This could turn into a complete free fall from which they can not recover, or this can turn into a week where they sort of regroup, retrench, set things up, and, you know, if Jermaine Jones has the team meeting that he wanted to call, get everybody on the same page and move forward. I do worry a little bit about what Jermaine Jones said, though, because I didn't hear that from Kurt Anofo about, you know, we need to be on the same page. People are trying to do too much. I didn't hear that from Anofo. He doesn't like to talk about his players. He was asked questions about his players at the post-game news conference and said, look, I'm not going to discuss my players in front of the world. You know, we'll take care of that inside the dressing room. But you wonder a little bit if Jermaine Jones, in reading his comments, one of my first thoughts was, is he sort of taking a role that the coaches have left open? Is he maybe stepping up and saying things the coaching staff should be saying and aren't, you know, and you know, that's something else to keep an eye on too. If some of the players feel like the coaches aren't addressing the issues in the correct way and they take it upon themselves, that could lead to another big split. Maybe the coaching staff resents that and said, look, guys, we'll handle it. When something needs to be said, we'll say it. And some of the players would come back and say, well, you're not doing it now. So this is a very key week. If the Galaxy turn around and play a good game against Montreal and win, we're beyond the point now where playing a good game is enough. They need to play a good game and get a result. If they do that, you know, then I think everything will turn. We'll be talking about rainbows and butterflies again. If not, this could be get really ugly before it gets nice.
Well, the one thing I'll sort of add to your comment there about, you know, I always thought it was a big thing, sort of a Bruce Arena's teaching and coaching style, that he allowed the players to police themselves, right? And so realistically, under a Bruce Arena team, I think Jermaine Jones would be allowed to go into the locker room and say, hey, we're not being accountable. And I don't think Bruce would have a problem with that. I don't think Kurt should have a problem with it, but I understand what you're saying. If there's a gap in leadership here, somebody like Jermaine Jones is going to try to fill that, because he certainly doesn't want to be on a team in Los Angeles that, you know, wins 8 or 9 games this year. And everybody laughed and, you know, cackled at me whenever I said this team could win 8 or 9 or 10 games. And I also said that they could make a deep run in the playoffs. I mean, I've pretty much covered all my bases there. I'm safe on that. I would like to point out, seemed to be completely wrong in the whole second half team thing, although maybe the Galaxy got the halves confused this time, because the LA Galaxy were absolutely dominating right up until the 60th minute and then decided not to show up for the last 30 minutes of this. And that's the other thing that I think is difficult for people to understand, Kevin, or it's at least something that you have to take into perspective. The LA Galaxy, and I said this earlier, played some of their best soccer I've seen them play all year, Kevin, in this game. That they lost 4-2, they played some of the best soccer I've seen them play. It's also I've also seen some of the worst soccer I've seen them play is in this game as well in the last 30 minutes. So I mean, there's such a there's a up and down to this game that I think makes it more emotional and more, you know, unnerving for fans as you're watching this, that they're not together. They haven't figured this out. The puzzle pieces are not all there yet, and that's a problem. All right, let's get to some more.
One more thing about that is just before we let the idea of whether or not this is going to turn into a big slide. After Montreal, if you look at the Galaxy schedule, they have Orlando City on the road. Orlando City's started off okay. They have 6 points there, 3 wins, 3 losses. So they have Orlando City on the road. Then they have Seattle and Philadelphia coming into StubHub. Then Chicago Fire with Bastian Schweinsteiger, who's given them new life. Then they go back on the road for New York Red Bulls. So they've got sort of a 6-week stretch of some difficult games coming up. And that's why I think they need to stop the bleeding right here so that they can go forward with a little bit more confidence. Otherwise, you could definitely see them. I mean, if they lose, just playing devil's advocate, if they lose to Montreal, I could see them losing to Orlando in Orlando. The Seattle game here will be tough. Philadelphia, they should win that one. Then Chicago would be tough. So, you know, there's if they lose the Montreal game, they could lose 3 of the next 4, and then they could be in really deep trouble.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, as we say. All right, I want to get to some listener questions, and let's do these a little more rapid fire. If we find one that's really interesting that maybe we haven't touched on yet, we can drop down into it a little bit. But let's go down some awesome listener questions that we have. So here's our first one from Cameron, and Cameron writes in, "What does the defense need to do to get a shut out, Kevin, and your best Bruce Arena impression?" I'd love to hear your answer to that one.
Don't give up any goals.
There you go. That's what listen, it's all about coming together as a unit. They need more guys behind the ball. For me, Yelle Vondam and stuff that I talked about before, Kevin, Yelle Vondam needs to be on that back line a lot more than he is. And if that means giving up some of the offensive dangers that he brings, then that's what that means right now. He needs to stabilize that back line. Ashley Cole helps. Daniel Starris is always going to be sort of right on the edge. He might be the new Leonardo. You know, he might be that guy who's always like, why is he starting? Realistically, he's starting because I don't think the LA Galaxy have anybody else back there. And then you have Nathan Smith, who I think has earned himself a spot and continues. He didn't have a great game. He didn't have a horrible game. I'm not worried about Nathan Smith right now. It's not too soon. And somebody actually asked that. Josh asked that. He says, too soon to start Nathan Smith. Should Kurt consider reverting back to Rafa Garcia? For you, Kevin?
I thought Nathan Smith was good. Rafa Garcia is not a natural defender. He's a defensive midfielder. I thought he played pretty well. I think Nathan Smith has probably played a little bit better. One thing about Rafa Garcia is, and maybe this figures into it, and this is no knock on Nathan Smith. I'm thinking maybe, as you said, maybe in that defensive midfield role, maybe Rafa comes in. The thing I love about him is his heart.
Yeah.
And you can make the argument that some players on this team are lacking heart right now, and maybe that's why you would put Rafa Garcia in there. But you're absolutely right on Vondam. Look, they scored 2 goals against Vancouver. They were winning 2-1.
Yep.
At that point, don't you bring in your closer? Don't you sit on the lead? Why is your number one defender all of a sudden thinking he's an attacking midfielder?
Yeah, you can't get straight. This team gets stretched too easily, and for me, Vondam is one of those reasons. I love the guy in terms of a captain for this team and how much he loves Los Angeles. This may be the case, and I think sometimes hitters in baseball have this problem, Kevin. They're trying too hard. All right, and I think Yelle Vondam for me is trying too hard right now. He needs to relax a little bit, take some deep breaths, be the captain of that team, lead from that backside, and stay home a little bit more. You still got to get him forward on corner kicks, and the LA Galaxy need to learn to transition better on those corner kicks whenever the ball comes back out, because that's when they're getting beat a lot of these times. So that's the thing that I think they need to focus off. Yelle Vondam comes back. Is just a little more stable back there for me. Let's go to Travis. And Travis just has a statement because he's saying McBean deserves time with Zardes and not necessarily Gio. I think both you and I, Kevin, expect Giovanni Dos Santos and Giassi Zardes to be the pairing for this start on Friday as long as everybody's healthy and free through training this week. So, you know, does Jack McBean moves to the bench? I mean, that seems like the obvious answer, although I think that's unfair because I don't think it's Jack McBean who hasn't been showing up to these games.
Well, who do you put in the midfield, though? I mean, could you put Gio in, not that he's earned it, but what if he were to play in, say, a kind of a number 10 role, and then maybe Husidic as the holding midfielder? That way you could still have McBean and Zardes in the field, no?
Yeah, I don't think that works. Because then what are you doing with Jones? You're throwing Jones out with the bathwater now? I mean, realistically, you need Jermaine Jones. And listen, the big problem with sitting Joao Pedro comes down to something that I know fans love to talk about, Kevin. But it's the fact that he's a TAM player. He's making a ton of money. The LA Galaxy went out and got this guy. This is one of the things I wanted to touch on. You talk to somebody, and it's not my story to tell, so if I'm talking out of line, you tell me that the LA Galaxy wanted Joao Pedro.
What my understanding was that they wanted Joao Pedro. That was the guy that they were looking for all along. Now, we know that Alessandrini was the big fish,
right.
But in addition to Alessandrini, who they just took forever to get to negotiate, they were apparently talking to Alessandrini's agent for over a month. That was the guy they identified, and that was the guy they were going to sink their money into. But as the other midfielder, they had identified a player in the Dutch league that they liked a lot.
Gregor, this is the Gregor Breinberg. I remembered his name.
Right.
So, yes, go ahead.
Right. And he actually went on Fox Sports in Holland. And that stunned me because I didn't know that there was a Fox Sports in Holland. But he went on Fox Sports in Holland and said, my next game will be with the LA Galaxy. I'm leaving, Holland. I agreed to a contract. I'm on my way to LA this week. In his mind, it was said and done. And he said that on national TV in the Netherlands. That was the week that the Galaxy announced that they had signed Joao Pedro. And I was told by a couple of people on the club near the end of that to back off the Breinberg thing, that they had come to negotiations and come to a conclusion with the guy they really wanted, which turned out to be Joao Pedro. So apparently the negotiations with the Dutch player was sort of a ruse, maybe to keep
backup,
price that.
Or backup, right?
I think they had decided that they were going to bring two players over. Alessandrini was one. It could have been a backup to Alessandrini, although why would you bring two defensive midfielders over? I don't know. Those two seem to be very redundant. But it seemed to me that it was a backup plan in case things fell through with Joao Pedro, and also probably part of contract negotiations to let Joao Pedro know that, falsely as it would have turned out, let him know that, look, you're not the only fish that we're talking to. You're not the only guy we're talking to. We have another guy, and he's ready to go. If you don't want to come, that's fine. You can stay here in Portugal.
Yeah.
So, the Galaxy did not seem to be totally honest in those negotiations. But I was told that Joao Pedro was the guy they wanted. He was the guy they were going to spend the money on. He was going to be a TAM guy because he's only 23. That was the guy they wanted. I know from talking to a lot of people in Galaxy ownership and the front office that they do not like you to use the word cost cutting. They insist that there's no cost cutting and they have a lot of money to spend and they can spend it if they want. And they did make a huge offer to Ibrahimovic, which we believe is about $18 million. So yes, that's all true. But they're also looking at the players that they sign and what they're signing them for and what they do. And I think that had something to do with the fact that AJ De La Garza as a fifth defender, which is how it looked in the preseason as a fifth defender, was too expensive at $250,000 a year. They were very upset with Robbie Keane and Steven Gerrard being on the bench at the end of last year for $10 million. And they've said repeatedly, DPs have to be game changers. If that's their philosophy, I'm guessing that TAM players have to be very valuable as well. And when you look at the TAM players they have, Jermaine Jones, Yella Van Dam, and Joao Pedro, I think probably some people, some bean counters on the Galaxy side are looking at that and saying, are these guys living up to what we think a TAM player should be?
Yeah, and Yella Van Dam, technically a designated player, but Kevin's also right because he's also a TAM player because eventually that will be bought down. So LA Galaxy just saving some TAM money. We've already gone over that. But I wanted to go through that because, I heard that story and I don't think it's out there enough because people were all, after Joao Pedro's rather poor performance against Vancouver on Saturday, people were talking about, hey, he was always the backup. And from what I've been told and talking to you and what you've been told is that he wasn't the backup. He was technically plan A. So I don't want you to skate on the Galaxy in terms of, hey, he was the backup. We always wanted Breinberg because I think there was a rumor out there that Breinberg wanted more money. And that's what threw all the negotiations out. But that's not my understanding. That's not your understanding, Kevin. And so I wanted to sort of set that story straight as we know it.
His agent could have asked for money. I did see some stuff from his agent talking about how difficult the negotiations were. It sounded like his argument was, I thought we had everything set and then the Galaxy wanted something else.
Mm-hmm.
That could be agent talk for saying we had it all set and then I asked for more. And that happens too. But everything I've heard about Brian Bart from people that played with him in Holland is that he is a kind of a Nigel de Jong clone, a very physical guy. a very defensive-minded player, which is someone the Galaxy could use now. A great character guy. Everyone I talked to talked about what a great character guy he was. He was captain of his team in the Dutch First Division at 22 or 23, and so definitely a guy that would have contributed in the clubhouse as well. But you know, Jovan Korosky is really got his finger on the pulse of this stuff over in Europe. He's the one that has been going over there and scouting players and talking to scouts. And the Galaxy now, by the way, have hired scouts in Europe. They sort of see this as the new frontier. They're looking at TAM players. They're not so much trying to sign Wayne Rooney as they are trying to sign TAM players and younger players. But they're scouting pretty heavily over there, and they were really, really sold on João Pedro. So, you know, I guess a lot of the Galaxy fans haven't seen what they saw yet, but obviously the Galaxy is signing him at 23, believe that there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, it's interesting as that develops. And so Joe Beth, who's a great listener and I've talked to many times and met in person, asked, you know, was João Pedro do as badly as I think he did? What do you think of him? I think we've given you sort of our background on that, Joe Beth. So if you have any more questions, you know, that's a good. She also asked, where has Gio gone and how long until he's benched, Kevin? Does Giovanni Dos Santos ever hit the bench in the near future?
Well, you know what? That's very interesting. Given what happened last year, Giovanni Dos Santos, and I'm talking about what happened last year with the DPs and the Galaxy's disappointment over the performance of Keane and Gerrard down the stretch. Given their lack of patience with DPs at this point in time, I think Giovanni Dos Santos wants to stay as far away from the bench as possible. But having said that, we just talked about if you're going to have McBean play and you're going to have Zardes play and you're going to have Jermaine Jones play and you need a defensive midfielder, how long can they afford to play Gio if he's going to, again, have his face on a milk carton and just disappear during the game? So, I think that there has to be a come to God moment for Gio here pretty soon. Is he going to step up or is he going to have to go to the bench because he's simply not playing as well as Jack McBean, you know, and other guys too? I know that Kurt has talked a lot about how injury to Sebastian Lletget is going to create playing time for other players, guys that he wants to see, and he wants to see them on the wing and at forward, guys that he wants to see in there, Ari Lassiter, Bradford Jamieson. You know, if Gio is not going to play, you know, maybe those guys get inserted to bring a little bit of energy and a little bit of desire as well. If I'm Gio and I'm concerned about my future with the Galaxy, now is kind of a good time to step up and actually say, I'm better than Jack McBean. I'm your guy now. Yep. And I'm going to combine with Yossi like we did last year. You know, let me add that as one final caveat. And I don't want to give Gio too much benefit of the doubt, but he did seem to combine pretty well with Giassi last year, and Giassi's played, 23 minutes this season? So yeah, maybe a full 90-minute Giassi's artist in the game will help wake Gio up.
I hope it does. I'll be honest, you know, if it moves Jack McBean to the bench and puts him in sort of the Alan Gordon role that Alan Gordon played, I always thought that would be Jack's sort of way he fit into this lineup. That may actually benefit the LA Galaxy more than having him up there as the full-time option there. But again, if you're not going to get people to combine with him, Kevin, it's pretty useless. I wrote down a note while you were talking too, because it reminded me of something, and I said, you know, the Galaxy have said that they're going to go after designated players, Kevin, of what they need, right? And what the LA Galaxy need in the summertime, it's going to not necessarily be like, we're going to go get a striker. We're going to go get this. They want to get somebody who fits in the team, and they stress that over and over again in the preseason. They're trying to find the pieces that fit together. And so I'm thinking, if the LA Galaxy go into, you know, the summer transfer window and what they need, and right now I'm really leaning towards a defensive midfielder, right? Do they sign a designated player who's a defensive midfielder? And if that happens, do you go back and look at Nigel de Jong and scratch your head even more? Because there you had a defensive midfielder who was, quite honestly, one of the best players I think that has ever graced Major League Soccer fields in his knowledge and understanding of the game. And you can call him a dirty player all you want if you watched him. Bruce Arena was right. You know, the league wasn't quite ready for what he was able to do and how he was able to play. But if you go back and look at that, I mean, do you scratch your head now and say the Galaxy need that defensive central midfielder, and they had one in Nigel de Jong, and he departs for reasons sort of unknown? And I mean, it comes full circle if that happens.
Wow, there was a lot to chew on right there. Let me just say, as when you started that, my very first thought was, yeah, they do need a defensive midfielder. How about Nigel de Jong? That was my very first thought. A lot about that. First of all, We still don't know why Nigel left. Nobody will talk. I've tried a million different ways to try to get Nigel on the phone from Turkey, and it just won't happen. And it makes me believe that he is still pretty upset about the way things went down. I'll try to go through this as briefly as possible, but I've worked to try to track this down, and all I've come up with so far is theories. One theory is that the Galaxy were not going to allow him to play the 23 games that he needed to play to vest his contract. That would have made him a DP for the next two seasons at a cost of $3 million, and the Galaxy did not want to do that. Not because they didn't want him, but because they wanted to have the roster freedom as far as what they would pay him and how many years he would be here and how many DPs they would have, because that could have maxed him out on DPs. So that's one theory. The other theory is one that's been going around and hasn't been nailed down yet, is the league was not happy with Nigel DeJong.
This is the Josh theory. They didn't like his rough play.
Excuse me?
That's the Josh theory, by the way. That's the one that I subscribe to.
And there's a lot of circumstantial evidence to point to that, too. Either way, he was gone. Now, Bruce Arena, when he was sent away, Bruce Arena could really not hide his disappointment and almost disgust at what had happened. And he wouldn't give up the reason that Nigel DeJong had to go, but he did say repeatedly that Nigel was the best player on the team.
Yep.
And so that begged the question of, why would you let the best player on your team go? And he never ever answered that question. So Bruce Arena agrees with us that Nigel was the best player on the team last year. Let him go. Not only did he let him go, he let him go on a free transfer.
Yep.
Nigel went to Galatasaray, where the Dutch national team coach and one of the coaches in the Dutch national team program was. Nigel wants to get back onto the national team scene. So that was all good for him. I kind of thought that, like you did, that maybe – you know, that MLS wasn't quite ready for him, that he might come back. I know that Nigel loved it here. He did buy a house
and then
in
he sold
San
it.
Fernando Valley, a multi-million dollar house.
Yep.
It looked like he was set up. I did see that shortly after that he left for Turkey that the house went on the market. So
right.
That tells me that Nigel was as disgusted as Bruce Arena was. I don't see Nigel coming back here, especially to the Galaxy, anytime soon. But you're absolutely right. That would be the one player, if you could pick a player – almost worldwide, who would change the Galaxy, fix the Galaxy, fix what's wrong with the Galaxy right now, it's Nigel, because of the way he played and his a quick adaptation to the MLS system. He did not have any sort of growing pains coming here. The Galaxy really miss him a lot. And I think, you know, whatever happened, however he was allowed to leave on a free transfer, you know, however that happened, I think the Galaxy need to examine that and find out, you know, learn, like, be like Diop, learn what they can from their mistakes.
Yeah, and it's certainly, I mean, interesting. Just a thought that popped into my head, right? You look at it. I mean, it's certainly, if you look at the suspensions that Nigel had to put up with during his time in Major League Soccer, and you look at the suspensions the LA Galaxy have already had to put up with, maybe it doesn't make a ton of sense. Maybe none of those guys would ever see the field. But at the same time, I feel like something's there, Kevin. It's one of those weird things, but I feel like something is there in that story. And one of these days, Nigel DeJong is going to write a book, and perhaps we're going to find out. Or Bruce Arena is going to write a book, and perhaps we're going to find out. But until then, the mystery continues, and that's interesting.
I need to work a little harder to try to pin some people down on this, and maybe some of the people that are, excuse me, now with the national team will be free to talk now that they're coaching there. But you do mention the suspensions, the rough play. I talked to a lot of players on other teams when the Galaxy got Nigel DeJong, who has the reputation of being a headhunter, you know, Yella Van Damme, a hugely physical player. I talked to some players on other teams about how that changed the Galaxy. And one player from the Sounders told me that now when you go into the attacking end, all of a sudden your head's on a swivel. You're looking for those guys. You're not so much looking for the ball. You're not looking to make a good run. You're trying to identify where those guys are so you don't get blindsided. That's why the Galaxy was so good defensively, I believe, at the beginning of last season. That's what they're lacking now. I mean, I think some of these guys that are coming in on these breakaways, first of all, it wouldn't have happened with Nigel there. But as they're coming in and the entire Galaxy defense is behind them, I wonder if any of those guys will slow down a little bit just to take a peek over their shoulder to see where Nigel is.
Yeah.
So that they don't get clipped from behind, because, you know, a lot of Nigel's most devastating tackles came from behind.
Yep.
And no one wants to be cut down when they're speeding toward the goal, you know, with their eyes on the ball.
Yeah. And he also made a bunch of very good tackles from behind as well. So, I mean, he really was a good player, and I got to sit down and talk with him one-on-one, still probably one of the most impressive impressed I've ever been with a player, just in one, his kindness and his ability to articulate the game and understand the game. The guy was just ridiculously smart, in a lot of things. And, Jermaine Jones brings some of that bite, but you're missing it. All right. The LA Galaxy will face off against the Montreal Impact on Friday, April 7th at 7:30 p.m. This is a Friday night game. The game will be broadcast on Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes. Again, Montreal hasn't won a game. It'll be interesting to see if the LA Galaxy can sort of hold off on them. They played a wacky game against Chicago. They actually got a red card in that game, so I forget who exactly got red carded, but we'll be able to pick up all that stuff on Wednesday night show. I know normally it's on Thursday, but because it's a Friday game, it's a Wednesday night, so make sure that everybody goes over to cornerofthegalaxy.com/live, our live page there, and you can watch the show, and it's going to be me hosting solo by myself, so please come join me. I'm going to try to get some guests on as well, but we're going to have an hour of LA Galaxy talk getting ready for that Montreal game. All right, Kevin, anything else you want to talk about? We good?
No, I think that's it. Nigel, if you're listening, come on back.
Yeah.
All's forgiven on our end.
That's right. You can come on this show anytime you want, Nigel. You have an open line. All right. All right. If you're looking for Kevin Baxter on Twitter, it's KBaxter11. And of course, go to LATimes.com and find Kevin's wonderful writings for the LA Times about the Galaxy, about the Kings sometimes, about LAFC, all that stuff. He covers it all for the LA Times, and we're lucky to have him here. All right, if you're looking for me on Twitter, at Jay Guessman, J-G-U-E-S-M-A-N, at Galaxy Podcast. Big show on Wednesday night. Please join me there again. Live show, 7 p.m. We'll see everybody on Wednesday night, and then the game on Friday night. For Mr. Kevin Baxter, I'm Josh Guessman. You've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Have a great one, everybody.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy From the Box podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everybody.